This is Raul Lopez, and you're listening to How Do You Say Success in Spanglish? The path to success isn't easy. For minorities and people of color, many attempt this journey with little to no guidance. Join me as I sit down with individuals who share their stories of perseverance so that together we can learn how to say success in Spanglish. What's good, mi gente? It's your boy, Raul. Today we got my buddy, Juan Rodriguez. How's it going, Juan?
Doing good. I'm doing good, man. What's going on, Raul?
Good. I'm just hanging out, man. Ready to talk to you. I'm glad you got a chance to be here today. I've known Juan for quite some time now, so I'm excited to share his story with everyone. So just kind of give background on Juan. Juan Rodriguez is the founder and executive director of Winner Circle's XR Academy. He and his organizations are dedicated to empowering students in marginalized communities by providing them access to state-of-the-art technology and comprehensive educational programs. In addition to his primary role, Juan serves as an advisor at the Metropolitan Regional Career and Technical Center, the MET, in Providence, Rhode Island. In 2020, Juan's significant contributions to technology in the Ocean State earned him the prestigious Digital Tech 10 Award from Rhode Island Monthly. Welcome, Juan. Sounds like you do some amazing work helping the kids out. And so I'm excited to kind of get into everything. So just, I guess, to start off, you know, let's ask that big question. Who is Juan Rodriguez?
Yeah, man. I mean, again, thank you for having me. This is exciting, right? Who's Juan Rodriguez? So I would consider myself like a real humble person, right? A humble person that I like to serve my community. Most importantly, I make sure that I like to give back to the youth, empowering them and equipping them so that they can be successful. I always considered myself like the underdog. And it's kind of like being the kind of like the most slept on, the one who doesn't get invited to the table all the time, but I work hard and I'm diligent, I'm resilient, and I do kind of like what it takes so that I can be successful in my own eyes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, I think like we've known each other since high school. So I've known and I've seen the growth of you. And I remember even going back when we were in a program, Upward Bound. And Upward Bound is a program where it takes first-generation college kids, puts them in Rhode Island College, but they're at different colleges throughout the country, gives them kind of extra classes to take through the year. And in the summer, they take classes on campus, live in a dorm, and stuff like that. And I remember, for me, it was a big stepping stone and helped me get together. But I remember how challenging it was for you when you started about that. So tell me a little bit about how Upward Bound affected your life.
Yeah, I mean, Upward Bound was amazing. I mean, I love Upward Bound. I mean, just starting off, right, is those extra, that extra education, sacrificing your Saturdays and sacrificing 6 weeks out of your summer so that you can continue learning. And it was a challenge that kind of like was a challenge within itself. I also had some challenges at home. But I mean, I remember just being there, not wanting to be there, and doing everything that I could to just get kicked out of Upward Bound. And the director at the time was Mariam Boyage, who I would say like brought me into her arms, and she worked with me, right? After like receiving several demerits in one day, I thought I'd be kicked out and I'd be go about my summer, right? Enjoy my summer, hanging out with my friends, with my family. But Mariam didn't want, not that she didn't want me to do that, but she wanted me to commit to that organization and complete it till the end. And I say, if it wasn't for Mariam, she's kind of like one of the pillars in my life who helped me understand the value of education. So, yeah, I mean, I'm Upward Bound, being there, it was tough because, again, like, at times you didn't want to be there. Like, you didn't want to wake up early on Saturday mornings, or you didn't want to spend your whole 6 weeks learning new things, but it's definitely something that's beneficial. Looking at my life and thinking about the organization, it's definitely something that's beneficial and helped me along the way.
Nice. And I mean, you're from Rhode Island, same as me, and we kind of all kind of grew up in pretty rough neighborhoods. So it's very easy to kind of get caught up and end up doing stupid stuff on the streets. And I think Upward Bound kind of kept us out of that summer trouble that a lot of us can get into. And we used to you know, instead of being out in the street till 1 a.m, we were doing homework and doing math and doing chemistry till 9 before we had to go to bed and stuff like that. So, you know, I really appreciated what Upper Bound kind of kept us focused. And also, I think, built a family that kind of kept us motivated to keep going further. I think we had a little reunion just recently, and to see our family from the same class come together and the successes we did. And I credit that a lot to, you know, the motivation and what Upper Bound brings to the thing. So do you think nowadays programs like Upper Bound should still have a place for kids to succeed?
Of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, Upper Bound recruit students, first generation students who are entering college. And it just kind of like you touched upon a lot of good points, is that it was one of those programs that it made you like dive into those books and made you focus on your education, right? Where you were thinking about other stuff. You didn't get caught up in the streets. You wasn't making stupid decisions that affected your life. I mean, eventually, outside of that, you kind of do, but Upper Bound, again, Upper Bound's one of those programs, like, summer loss is like a real thing, right? There's a lot of students that if you're not committed to something that's related to education, you'll lose about like 50% of what you learn throughout the school year. And with Upper Bound, I mean, you was there kind of like learning the courses that you was going to take prior to you entering the school year. So it gave you like a head start before you entered the school in September. It kind of like equipped you, right? It gave you kind of like the extra knowledge that you needed so that you was prepared and you was ready to enter the school year in September, and you'd be successful throughout that whole school year because you had that support, you had the tutors, you had the additional work that you was working on Saturdays so that you wouldn't fall behind.
Yeah. I mean, I remember just coming into school at the beginning of the year and being like, no, we did this already in Upward Bound. I think that was the excuse for a lot of us. Oh, we did this in Upper Bound was kind of what we did.
Yeah.
And I know we're talking about Upper Bound a lot just because we, you know, it's a big part of, I think, both of our lives and the family and friends we get into. But, you know, just kind of go back, you know, tell me a little bit about who you were and where you grew up.
Yeah, I mean, I originally am from New York. I love to give credit to New York City. I grew up in Washington Heights, 180 and Broadway. But I moved here about like sixth grade. Fast forward, I'm in high school now. And I grew up in South Providence in the Washington Park area. At the time, I mean, it was a low income family. It's not one of the best neighborhoods in Rhode Island, but growing up there, it was a challenge, right? Trying to find my way, especially transitioning from a new city, is a lot different than New York. I remember kind of like trying to navigate through these different spaces, whether it be school, whether it be in my community, and not understanding everything to its full capacity, right? Like in New York, we travel like in small groups, just kind of like with the friends that we have in that building. And here in Rhode Island is different, right? Because here in Rhode Island, you have your community centers, you have your sports teams. It's definitely hard for me to understand that, but I was thankful for Upper Bound because like what you just mentioned is something that touched my heart real big, is that we became family there and we remain like, I mean, we still communicate with each other. We invite each other over to our houses. And I mean, we meet with each other. I think 2001 is that the biggest class where we're constantly representing at all the reunions, yeah, supporting each other in every way that we can.
Yeah, no, it's, we're pretty awesome. We'll put it out that way. You know, we do a good job. And I think a lot of us had big hearts and big hopes and big dreams. And I think, you know, we show it. And I think we like to give back as well. And so obviously one of the big aspects of Upper Bound is trying to get us prepared for college. And I think we all end up, a lot of us end up going to college from high school. And we realize we're not that prepared. You know, we try to be as prepared as possible and as successful. And I think it kind of gives us some guidance, but ultimately we still struggle. What were some of the challenges you felt when you went to college?
I mean, when I got to college, I mean, one thing that I said Upper Bound did, it did support us with like the time management.
Yep.
Making sure that we hold ourselves accountable with certain stuff. But one of the things that I struggled with, like, once I got to college, I had all this freedom, right? Like, no, I didn't have my parents waking me up every morning for class.
There was no demerits if you were late.
No demerits if I'm late, right? Like, but just kind of like on the educational aspect, I mean, I was slacking, right? To this day, I'm not a good reader. Like, I didn't comprehend stuff as I should. It takes some time for me to process some information. But those were some of my personal struggles. When I got to college, my first year, I mean, I entered talent development. And just being there was difficult. I eventually made it through the talent development program. But a couple of years afterwards, I mean, when I entered URI for the whole school year, I was falling behind just because I wasn't used to kind of like the workload. I wasn't used to, I think it was just that, right? I think it was just kind of like the heavy workload that you have to prepare yourself for. And being in Providence Public Schools, it doesn't prepare you for that kind of like that field. It doesn't prepare you for that sort of education. There's a lot of stuff that you kind of get pushed along. And it's not as rigorous to help you get through it into college.
Yeah, it's a situation where the schools are just so low income sometimes that they can't keep up with some of the bigger schools. And even though you go to your school, I mean, my school is the same. You go and you think you're top of the class at this school, and then you go to college and you talk to people and you're like, yeah, I got 1150 on my SAT. He's like, oh my God, were you drinking the night before? Because, you know, I got like a 1400. And I'm like, no, my dad was really excited that I got that GPA, that SAT. And so, you know, there's different levels and you don't realize it. To, you know, when you go to college, everyone's the best of their best. But there's different, you know, paths and different ways of determining, you know, which path to take, especially when it comes to college. And I think for you, you ended up going to a slightly different path. For college eventually outside of URI, right?
I did. I mean, one of the struggles even in high school, right, is that we're there in high school. And I feel like though we go to like these public schools, being a first generation student in America, I mean, our parents aren't, not to say they're not fully supportive, but like they don't understand the education system here, right? And they solely depend on the education system to see us become successful. And so they can't support us when it comes to like certain academics, right? I know that when it came to like science or English, trying to catch up on new vocabulary words, it was a challenge because my parents didn't know any of that stuff. For math is to an extent, but like trying to kind of like navigate and understand everything on my own was really difficult, right? My parents didn't know how to look for tutors or how to get the additional resources to help me become successful in high school. So I feel like I just got by. And when I did get to college, I mean, I flunked out and I did have to pivot into kind of like finding my own lane, right? After flunking out of URI, I had to take some time off, right? Where I kind of like had to... I kind of like think about my own life, reflect a lot, and think about what is it that I want to do, and kind of like how can I find a way to be successful and to work with things that I think will benefit me the most.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, we get pushed across the whole, especially in our generation. I think it was college. Go be a lawyer. Go be a doctor, go be an engineer. You know, we were always pushed to this really high level, high standards of you got to go this way. And a lot of us don't think of our strength. I'm a horrible reader. I read so slow that I hate reading. You know, I read really slow. It's just, I was never really good at it. My grammar is fine. Like, I mean, I've written 25 page essays in college and gotten A's in them with no problem. But if you ask me to point which one's the pronoun, which one's the adjective, I'd fail. That first grade exam, I would fail. I could write you a grad level essay, but I would fail that basic grammar class, because of the things or whatever. And so I always wonder sometimes like, oh, you know, if I had gone to a different school, you know, and so what did you have to do to pivot yourself?
I mean, I had to reflect, like I said, I had to start thinking about what is it in my life that I want to work on and take away that weight. for my family, because you brought another good point up, is right. It's like our family set that bar up. Coming overseas from a different country, like your family wants you to be successful, and the only thing that they know is that, hey, you got to come to America and become a doctor, become a lawyer, an engineer, right? So it took a lot of time for me to kind of like have that talk with my parents, specifically with my father at the time, because my father was the biggest supporter. He's kind of like the one that guided my life and made sure that I was always doing the right thing. But just kind of like letting him know, like, hey, like, I want to enter a new school, understanding myself and understanding what's the best way that I can learn, which was like hands-on. I decided to enroll into a technical school, right, as New England Tech, and pursue a degree in video and audio production. And it was really exciting, right, because now I'm at this new school, and as soon as you enter the school, the first thing that they do is that they give you access to equipment, and you're learning through that, right? You're learning through experimenting and practicing and trying to build these projects and kind of like moving along on that aspect. But it was good, man. I mean, I was excited to kind of like work on that level, and moving forward. I think that kind of like that's what really helped me the most.
Yeah, I think reflecting, being able to reflect is brave. I think a lot of people don't do it, and not just taking the this isn't working for me, everything's shit, let me give up on myself, but you know, sitting back and saying, oh shit, this isn't working for me, what can I do to get something to work. That's, you know, it's very brave, and that's hard for a lot of us. I mean, especially like you said, there's this immigrant guilt sometimes we feel, where your parents sacrifice so much for you to come to this country that you kind of feel you owe them to do the best and the brightest. I was supposed to be a heart surgeon, you know, and it's like, I failed. Yeah. I failed chemistry my freshman year. I'm never going to be a doctor. I fucked it up within a month of college. I was never going to be a doctor. And so you have to kind of build that up. And so when you got to this tech school, New England Tech, how did that benefit you more, and how did that help you create that focus to what you wanted to do for your career?
I mean, so like I said, is that being in that school, it allowed me to work hands on, right? That's kind of like my best learning style. So I was able to, instead of kind of like learning through theory, I was able to kind of like learn through like working on different projects. And that alone got me excited, right? That's what built my curiosity. So I was always like looking up different ways to like build up on my skills and make my projects a lot better than my peers. But there were those challenges, right? Because I mean, I entered that industry, and I entered that kind of like that major, that field, with no prior experience, right? There's a lot of students who were in my class who had the resources when they were in high school, had the resources in their community. So they were creating like these dynamic projects where I was still struggling. Right, I was still falling behind and asking them questions like, hey, how did you create that? How do you make this happen? And it does become intimidating when kind of like when you're looking at your own stuff and it's not up to par. But I always kind of like worked hard, right? I was always asking questions and always like looking up videos as to like, what is some additional stuff that I can add to my projects to make them a lot better. And sure enough, I mean, at that time, like I mentioned before, is that I was kind of like going through my own personal struggles at home, within myself. I eventually got kicked out of New England Tech because of some stupid decisions that I made in my life. I had my financial aid taken away, and it's something that affected me long term. But eventually I overcame that. I eventually got my financial aid back and I re-enrolled into New England Tech. But during that time, during like kind of like that period where I was I want to say it was about like a year or so when I was not in school, I bought a camera, right? And that's what kind of like when YouTube first started to emerge, a lot of my friends were excited. They started becoming rappers. And that's the biggest reason why I bought a camera. It's like, hey, it's going to start rapping, right? I'll buy a camera. I'll record all your music videos. So having my own personal equipment, I was able to shoot music videos. I was able to record commercials for small businesses. In addition to the commercials, I was able to record promo videos for local organizations. So now my resume reel was more elaborate. So when I re-entered at New England Tech, when I put together all my videos, it wasn't just my school projects. It was kind of like an addition to all the other projects that I was working with in the past.
Yeah, it's great because now a lot of people have easier access to cameras and to technology, where before you wanted to edit video, you needed a big ass machine in a room to edit video and edit film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's like, oh, I'm going to, my daughter's creating YouTube videos upstairs in her bedroom. You know what I mean? It's like on her iPad. It's such a different world. I think people get that opportunity now to kind of build that. And sometimes I think it's good for people to realize that too, that, you know, you don't always have to build your career behind a brick and mortar school. Sometimes like you could do stuff outside of that. And even if you stumble, you can build up and, you know, make something work out of your stumbles, you know? And I think I bring it up all the time with that whole Batman quote, you know, why do we fall so we can teach ourselves to stand back up? You know, it's
For sure. Yeah. I remember when YouTube first came out, like learning different codecs. I mean, at that time, I want to say HD wasn't even a thing. So it was kind of like the frame rate. I mean, the frame rate was the same, but like the aspect was like, it was in 1080, right? It was like 720 by 480. And it started slowly to evolve. So the quality of videos were trash. And then kind of like seeing that from that time to where we are today, like you could record 4K on your phone, mm-hmm. Which is like really dope. And even kind of like seeing everything, all the content that's available on YouTube and on Google that will help you advance is like really exciting. And kind of like showing students, I mean, that's kind of like what I love doing now, is just showing students how to value those resources and how to use those resources to help them advance whatever they're doing.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because that's, I think you told me before that it was around this time when you were doing stuff with video that you started kind of dipping your toes in being an educator. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, right after leaving New England Tech, it was quite some time until I became an educator, but I want to say my last quarter at New England Tech, I was hired by a local affiliate television station, the CW28 at the time. And I mean, I was really excited to be there, man. That's kind of like why I felt like really successful. I want to say, hey, I made it out the hood and I'm working at a TV station. I was always bragging about myself. But on the same token, I was always being supportive of my community and providing different organizations and different businesses, small businesses with low-cost videos, producing small commercials for them, finding different ways so that they can be on TV and promoting their businesses as well. And I was also providing workshops for young students so that they can learn the technology, they can learn the industry, and learn how to produce videos themselves. Most importantly, what I felt was big is that I want the students to be able to tell their stories, right, through video production, through audio production. But I always worked hard while I was there, right? And the biggest thing that I was working hard on was this award called the CW, the Model Affiliate Award, where I'd spend numerous hours kind of like working off the clock, whether I'd show up super early or leave hours after kind of like when I clocked out. I mean, continue working hours after I was supposed to clock out. But then I eventually received that award, and not kind of like being excited to receive that award because I lost my brother at the same time. But shortly after losing my brother, that's when I decided I wanted to become an educator. That's when a friend kind of like encouraged me, like, hey, you should dive into this. You can definitely become a teacher and show students digital media and creating like graphic design, recording videos and recording audio. And that's kind of like when I decided to dive in and go back into the same school district where I was once a student. So yeah, man, it was a hard pivot. It definitely changed my life. But I mean, I'm super excited for making that decision.
And what is the process that you had to do to become a teacher? Because you were obviously didn't go to school to become a teacher.
I did not, man. It was a challenge, man. I mean, so many different things went on in my life at that time, from 2014 to like 2017, because I became an educator in 2017. I lost my brother in 2014. I mean, that's the time when I was married. That's the time when my first son was born. But I remember I also received my bachelor's degree in communication, focusing on public relations. And sure enough, in the Rhode Island Department of Education, all you need is a bachelor's degree to become an educator, with no prior background in education. So you didn't need any courses for that. And not to discredit any educators out there, and I just kind of wish that I had some prior knowledge or some prior training or education, but something that I just applied, and just for me having that experience as a film producer, as a TV producer, I was able to become a CTE educator at a middle school. So all I needed was that background, 5 years of experience in that industry, to become a career and technical educator. But there's so many different challenges to becoming an educator. It's not as easy as I thought.
What were some of those challenges?
I mean, you're jumping into the education field right now. You're learning all these new jargons, IEPs, 504s, and you're signing your life away, right? Because you're signing for all these adjustments that you need to make for students, in special education, making adjustments for students who have high needs. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand like some of the stuff that, so kind of like their needs and how to make those adjustments for those students. I didn't understand how to differentiate. I didn't understand scaffolding. So that alone, was difficult. It was a challenge, kind of like, understanding that and being in those spaces with the students and trying to do my best to provide them with the best education, and help them become successful.
Did you come in thinking that you were going to be like stand and deliver and just be like, I got this. These kids are going
to. Yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, I provided these workshops in the past, and like I thought it was going to be the same thing. Like, hey, yeah, all my students are going to be good. Like I got some experience doing this. But being in the school setting, you have like, probably like a good 5 or 6 students who have IEPs and an additional 5 or 6 students who have 504s, and each of them have their own accommodation needs, right? And trying to find out and trying to like assess your class and making sure that from the beginning to the end that they're learning something through those different assessments, while providing those different adjustments for them. It was a challenge. It's something that that I kind of like had to learn and learn the hard way, right? But it's something that I'm grateful for, right? Because I mean, over the time that you kind of like put your head down and you fight through all those tough situations.
And is this when you started working at the Met?
No, I mean, my first school I was working at, West Broadway Middle School. It was a middle school in Providence. And middle school is tough, man. Middle school is like students are going through their own stuff. I mean, they're growing personally. Middle school in Providence, I mean, they're going through their own personal stuff at home. They're going through their own challenges. So just kind of like navigating through all that stuff. It was difficult. But I think the most important thing for me was making sure, first and foremost, was making a connection with the students on a deeper level prior to me, like making sure that they can learn, right? Because once I had that connection with them, they started building that trust in me, and things become a lot smoother afterwards.
And you were incorporating technology in your classroom. I know you were a career technical educator, but were you starting to do just the camera stuff, or when did you start branching off into some of the more like VR stuff that you do now?
So, I mean, that all took some time, right? After was Broadway, I went to Hope High School. After Hope High School, I took a year off. And that's when I kind of started diving into virtual reality. Well, I wanted to provide students with a safe space where they can compete in esports, specifically focusing on VR. And that was like in the August of 2019. And then March of 2020 came and we got hit with the pandemic. And that was a blow within itself. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, like, damn, I just invested $10,000 on like all this equipment. What am I going to do with this? Like, I can't even bring students in these same spaces. So I decided that, hey, I want to provide a curriculum where, again, focusing and empowering students to tell their stories. And that's when I slowly started building this curriculum where students are able to learn how to design XR video games and create XR content.
What is XR content?
So XR is an umbrella term for virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality. So it's kind of like our focus at the Winner's Circle XR Academy, where students are not only now they're gaining access to these different technologies, but now they're able to build up skills where they're learning how to design and code their own content using these technologies.
I think coding is something that's been, introduced to kids at an early age nowadays. I mean, I think people see the importance and the possibilities for a lot of these kids to get successful with coding. I know my daughter, they were doing that early age coding coding program. I forget the name of it, in her, like, in second grade or third grade. You know, they couldn't even write, but she was already working with algorithms and certain, you know, stuff like that. And so it's great. I mean, I was a kid that my dad bought me a computer at the age of 13, and I've been doing IT ever since. You know, that's been my whole life, my whole career. And so I know the impact that can give kids. And so what is the type of curriculums that you guys do with this XR stuff?
So like I said, I mean, students are learning how to design. So they're learning the whole design process that professionals take. There's a lot of critical thinking, a lot of teamwork where they're working together. They're also learning how to design 3D models and how to integrate those 3D models into their virtual environment. So in addition to that, they bring everything to life through like basic coding. I think what's most importantly is that we're introducing this to students of color, black and brown students who are entering a field, right? The video game design field, or even the technology industry that's predominantly white, right? We also focus on young girls, right? We try to get young girls excited about this technology and let them know like, hey, you could definitely be successful in this industry. And we're proud to say, like, right, we hosted a hackathon last year, and this was our first hackathon. It was a statewide hackathon where about like 8 different schools participated, over 35 different students were involved. And the winning team was an all-girl team from an all-girl high school. So that was exciting to see. I mean, the name of the hackathon is Mind Blast XR. Students sacrificed their whole Saturday to participate in this. And at the end, we had like this big celebration where students presented their projects. So I mean, that's a whole another realm of it, right? Where now they're working on their public speaking, they're standing up in front of a crowd, expressing themselves, expressing their ideas. And they were able to do that, right? And this young group of girls, they made this amazing virtual reality exhibit that talked about health disparities. And it was really exciting to see. So they took home the grand prize. And it's really dope to see that now we have a group of girls that are, how should I say, they represent us. I mean, they're going to be there. They're always going to remember that. And I'm hoping that some of them kind of like come back and let me know, like, hey, like, because of Winner's Circle, I decided to continue pursuing a career in technology.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's, I think that's one of the things as an educator, you know, is your dream to have some kids come back and say, hey, you know, if I didn't do this, I would never have gotten to where I'm at. And, you know, you don't expect that thank you, but you just like the idea of being told, you know, hey, this was an impact. And so you're creating curriculums now for regular classrooms to use VR as well?
I mean, at the mat, it's a lot different. The mat, every student has their own curriculum. So, I mean, that's part of it. I'm also creating curriculums for my own organization, Winner's Circle XR. So we're finding different ways to for that students can learn these different technologies and how to create their own programs for virtual reality, augmented reality, or mixed reality. In addition, we're creating curriculum so that students can become drone aviators. We're just making sure that students can, I mean, one, have access to these technologies, but also learn kind of like what are the best ways to use this technology to support them with whatever it is that they're learning.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about technology is it costs money. And a lot of these kids don't have money to do that technology. So just being able to get their hands on it, the same way, like you said, when you went to New England Tech, these kids who had access to these technology beforehand were doing much better initially than you were. So it's good to be able to hand that into them. What are some of the projects that some of these kids have done with your programming in VR?
Yeah, I mean, so over the years, students were learning kind of like the basics of coding, the basics of like designing. But like, we've definitely made some changes. Like, we're being more intentional as to like how we provide these programs. We're making sure that when we form these partnerships with the schools, that we're not just kind of like your typical after school program. But a lot of our stuff are aligned with different standards, whether it's ISTE, whether it's next generation standards, whether it's the Common Core standards. So it is a rigorous curriculum, right? But we're also tying it into the students' curricula, right? We're asking the students to let us know what is it that they're learning in schools, whether it be ELA, what book have they read, what have they learned in their social studies class or their history class, or something that they've learned in science, so that they can create these virtual exhibits based on all that stuff, right? I always talk about the student who went to Cambodia with his family, and then afterwards decided to participate in our program, where he learned the whole design process. He learned how to design and code, and then he created an exhibit of Cambodia. Right? It's really exciting because he had the temples, he had the animals, and he had all these images that he took in Cambodia, and he incorporated that into his environment. And what's neat about it is that he brought all the characters to life to talk about the history of Cambodia. So now he's able to share that with his peers, and his peers are able to like learn about the history of Cambodia from that student's perspective. So that's really exciting within itself. I mean, students are creating exhibits like alternative endings to like some of their favorite books or some of the comics that they've read. They're creating exhibits based on like different times in social studies or in history that they've learned about. I like to focus on students' culture so they can learn how to celebrate their identity and celebrate themselves. So I say, hey, like, try to find something about your family. Try to find something about where your family's from. Let's create an exhibit based on that. So they're creating virtual museums, kind of like Puerto Rico, on Cuba, Dominican Republic, Cambodia, all these different countries that that resemble the student population in the cities that we serve, specifically Central Falls, Pawtucket, and Providence. But it's really neat for them to express themselves in that way, right? Because now they feel excited. They get excited about representing who they are and showing it off to their friends.
Now, and it's cool that are the schools accepting of having that type of technology brought into their classroom, or do you get some little hesitation from some of the school districts?
I mean, it is a challenge within itself, forming these partnerships with the schools. There's so many different factors, right? There's so many different reasons why we have these different challenges. Sometimes it could be the budget that schools have. I mean, schools have different needs, and those needs can change at any time. So it's hard for them to kind of like pay for this after-school program. And it's hard for us, right? Because now we're really dependent on grants and donations for that our organization can be successful. But at the same time, we have to also find a way to be sustainable, right? So we do have to charge the school. We have to let them know that there's a cost associated with it. So, I mean, that's one of the challenges. We try to make sure that we can support the schools in every way that we can. And we try to let them know, like, hey, we're here to support the students. So some schools have been receptive. They brought us in with open arms, and they're willing to work with us. There's other schools that have brought us in and allow us to provide our program as part of their curriculum now, where we're in school during school hours, where students are actually receiving credit to participate in our program. But over the years, what we try to do is that we try to build this plan where we can work with schools to integrate any technology, right? Whether it's AI, whether it's VR, whether it's AR, and how can we support the educators, right, along the way? And one of the things that we've done is that we worked with these educators, we worked with the schools, and let them know, like, hey, you focus on the content while we focus on the technology, right? It is a challenge because when you're integrating technology, teachers have to learn that the technology themselves, and that's a learning curve. They have to attend all these trainings, all these professional developments for that. Then they have to make another turn and think about how they're going to integrate this into the curriculum, how they're going to teach this to the students. So it does become discouraging for them. They already have enough on their plate where they don't want to add additional stuff. So they kind of tend to push some stuff away. But with our organization, like that's our model, right? Is like, hey, again, like let us focus on this technology and you focus on the curriculum. Where is funny enough that I like to say is like, if you think about like the 90s, and I'm showing our age right now, right? Like when they used to bring out the VCR and the TV to allow us to watch a movie that kind of like supported whatever it is that we learned to in addition to the lesson that was taught. So what we want to do is that we're going to bring out the VR cart and support that lesson, support the curriculum. And so it'd be another way for students to experiment and experience like different ways to learn whatever content is being taught in the classrooms.
Yeah. And one of the things you mentioned too is you are running a business and it needs to be sustainable. And so, well, it's nice talking about all the great things you're accomplishing, running a business has its own challenges. You know, what were some of the challenges just getting yourself, especially during COVID, you know, what were some of the challenges you had to deal with?
So, I mean, my background is video production, right? I went to school for that. I received both my undergrads in that, right? My associates and my bachelor's. So like all I would really know was like how to produce videos, right? I knew the business of the video, the TV industry, the film industry. But making that pivot into education was a challenge, right? Because now I have to learn about curriculums. I have to learn about standards, those different jargons that I mentioned, IEPs, 504s. And now I'm diving into nonprofit, right? Like I didn't know what nonprofit is. I didn't know tax exempt status, dealing with the IRS, budgeting for that is a whole different ballgame than budgeting for like film and TV. I mean, budgeting in general might seem kind of like very similar. I mean, you're playing around with numbers and making sure that you meet those numbers. But at the end, like this, there's some grants that you have to kind of like report out and show them like how did you use their funds. And a lot of that stuff was a challenge. Like I didn't understand nonprofit to its full capacity. I mean, I'm still struggling today. Trying to have a full grasp of it, but I mean, I use all the resources that I have. I mean, at first when COVID first started and I dove into nonprofit, I was using like Nonprofit for Dummies to read on those books. I had a really good mentor, Jeff Shoes, who was like really supportive of everything that I did, and he helped guide me along the way. And I give him so much credit and so much love because he was somebody that I definitely could lean on, whether it be an email, text, carrier, whatever it was. If I had a question, he'd answer right away. And he helped me kind of like go through that whole process, get my nonprofit exempt status, taught me the ropes and helped me kind of like be where I'm at today, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah. And with all of that, you still decided to kind of go back to school and get your master's as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one thing that I'm really proud of, right, is that I never want my peer educators I want them to understand that I value education. I value kind of like what they do. There's a lot of educators that are really so good at what they do, and I look up to them because, like, they've been in the field for so long. A lot of them enter the field, like, right after college. And being in this industry, it can become intimidating sometimes because you want to kind of like do your best, and you're not making that connection, or you don't think you're the best educator that you can be. So I did pursue a grad degree, specifically in education, And so that way I could get the training and the knowledge that I need so that I can be successful in this industry as well.
Yeah. And what was the, obviously going to college, going grad school now compared to going to college right out of high school and then going to New England Tech, you know, how was that evolution for you? How do you feel the difference between who you are and how you end up studying and doing your education has evolved for you?
I mean, one of the good things was that now I value my education, right? Now I had time management that worked really well under my belt. I knew how to kind of like, how to set, kind of like have my own space whenever I needed to study or anything. But I mean, that's another thing that has its own challenges. Now I'm a little older. Prior to like grad school, I didn't have all these grades. But I mean, I had two children. I was working at a school. I had two jobs. I was working a nonprofit full time as well. So trying to balance all of that, in addition to like going to grad school, it was tough, man. I mean, there was times that I didn't sleep. I mean, waking up the next morning to have to go to work, and then after being in the school, I have to like work on some grants or work on like. On workshops for the after school program or hiring someone. And then right after that, like catching up on my reading, or if not attending my child's sports practices. But it definitely something that was that was really hard to get through. I wouldn't say it was something that's easy, but that's kind of like what I like about it, right? Because if it's easy, everyone will be doing it. And I like that challenge. I like that I kind of like pulled through and I worked hard to be where I'm at. So, yeah, man, I eventually got it done. So I'm here now, two, 3 weeks away from crossing that stage to receive my degree.
Nice. Yeah, it's crazy to go and think back in the day when you started college, how difficult it was to balance yourself, and we had no responsibilities in the world. And now we're older, we have kids, we have families, and we're handling multiple projects all at once, stuff that would have made us feel like we were going crazy when we were like 18, 19, 20. And now we're just kind of like, oh, it's just an average day. I'm gonna work till 4, wake up at 7, take my daughter to school, then we're gonna work for another 8 hours, and then I'm gonna assistant coach, and then I'm gonna go jump on a podcast. And it's like, we do it now, and it's crazy to how much we can handle now compared to what we used to handle. But you know, that's the life, that's what you gain from time and wisdom, you know, the ability to handle stuff. And so one of the things is, you know, if you could go back in time and talk to yourself as a younger you and give yourself some advice, what's something you tell yourself?
One thing that I did touch upon is that, like, hey, like, I did have my own challenges at home. I had one parent suffering from mental health issues. I had another parent who's chronically sick that led to, like, pain medication addiction. So that was a challenge for me, but I would tell myself like, hey, you're gonna make it through, you'll be all right. But also most importantly, it's kind of like learn to value your time, right? Because time is something that you're never gonna get back, right? And I feel like there was a lot of times that I would just kind of like joking around, partying around, and not valuing time as much as I thought I should. But I think that's my biggest lesson, was like, hey, like, time management is good, but like learn to understand like those times, those minutes, learn to like use it at your best capacity, and learn to use it to move forward with everything that you're doing.
Nice. Yeah. And I guess finally, as part of the namesake of the show, you know, how do you say success in Spanglish?
How do I say success in Spanglish, man? I don't even know how to say it in Spanish. Oh, man, what does success mean to me? So I think success is subjective, right? Everyone should have success as like their own thing. You should never compare success to anyone else. So what you see on social media, what you see out there, I mean, you do want to set the bar based on like different role models that you have and different people that you look up to. But I think success should come in increments, right? It's like you set a goal. Once you meet that goal, you're successful, right? And you just kind of keep raising that bar and raise it up to different levels. And you keep working hard and you keep grinding, become resilient, and keep doing what you got to do, man, to be where you want to be one day. Like a lot of things, I always say I consider myself the underdog, because to this day, over the years, like you have those times where you have imposter syndrome, and you feel like, hey, like I'm not good enough, until like you start meeting those goals. But once you meet those goals, give yourself time for those small celebrations, man. Like, do what you can to feel proud of yourself, and enjoy that, right? Enjoy it until like it's time to set the bar up for something else and set yourself up for another movement.
Nice, man. Well, thank you, Juan. I really appreciate you being on this episode with me on the podcast, and all the support you've given me throughout all of this as well. And I know I'll hope to have you back on for more some more bigger and better things in your future.
Yeah, thank you, man. This is dope, man. I'm, like I said, man, Raul, I'm proud of you, man. Thanks. I mean, I definitely hope that we can connect and maybe you have like a part two. I mean, part three, part four.
Yeah, we'll definitely gonna have more. So don't worry about that, man.
Yeah,
and keep me involved in stuff you guys do too with your winter circle stuff, because you know I'm always supportive of that. I'm gonna try to get my daughter involved too, because she loves this whole technology stuff as well. So try to get her to get some programming.
So. Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, if I could throw a quick plug in.
Yeah, go ahead, dude.
So our organization, you can please check us out on our website, is www.winnerscirclexr.com. So that's winnerscirclexr.com. Our hackathon is mindblastxr.org, which is really exciting. You can see students' projects on there. You see the first place, second place, and third place project on that website. And we're preparing for the 2024 hackathon. So I'd love for folks to kind of like jump on our website, see what we have going on, check out some of the students' projects, and find different ways to support us. Because again, we're a nonprofit organization, but what's most importantly is that we can get students in these marginalized communities access to these technologies, develop these skills so that they can be successful. So we're doing everything that we can, man, to support them in schools. And hopefully we can start seeing more students that look like us, start creating content and seeing more content that reflect our student population.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah, of course. 100%. As someone who worked IT, that was very one-sided for a long time. Now, I'm seeing a lot more diversity in IT departments than I have in a long time. And it's good to see, you know, a few more Z's and accents being thrown in the name fields, you know, so it's great. And you know, anything to help build the community, man. So same thing, Juan, I'm so proud of everything you've done, man. And once again, I'm glad you were here. So thank you. And to everyone else listening, you know, thank you for tuning in and all the support. And I hope you'll join me again next time as we continue to learn how to say success in Spanglish.